wait for the smartest person in the room to get back here to help us wade through all this. I'm going to open a public hearing. I'm just going to go right ahead, if it's okay.
Open a work session?
And open a work session on House Bill 203. No, forgive me. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2039.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Actually, Mr. Chair, you can't do a public hearing because you have to go with what's on the agenda.
I'm going to open it. House Bill 2039. Now that the smartest person in the room is in the room.
Again, Mr. Chair, I don't want Ramona to come down here. And
No. We don't want to bother.
We don't want Ramona in this.
Exactly.
Thank God it's Friday.
Yes. Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2039, we first heard this bill on January 28th. It allows a car rental or leasing company to avoid liability for private parking violations incurred by vehicles that are owned by such company if the vehicle was in possession of the renter or lessee when the violation occurred. You have in front of you a -1 amendment. The language was discussed during the first public hearing. The amendment expands the scope of the measure to include businesses that sell or repair motor vehicles and also removes the provision which required the driver's license number to be included with the certificate of non-liability.
Thank you, Teresa. And the reason for my intention or desire to have a public hearing was so that we could discuss what's in the amendment. And so therefore, I'm going to call Mr. Elkins and Mr. Fuller up just to kind of come and fill us in on here so we have it all sunshining on everything. Everybody knows what we're up to and what's going on, and the committee's well informed before we have a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Al Elkins, representing Petrala. The amendment you have before is a compilation of two requests, one from Mr. Fuller's organization, which beginning on line 4 of the amendment would allow his group, persons that are engaged in the business of selling, renting, or repairing motor vehicles fall under this umbrella. And the Catrala amendment, which is on line 14, which we asked for, provides the name and the address of the individual who was in control of the vehicle at the time of the alleged violation. As you recall, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we wanted to take out the driver's license number. We didn't feel comfortable in providing that. So that's what that amendment does on line 14.
All right.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller on behalf of the Northwest Auto Trades Association. We simply took the language in the first part of the amendment from a different part of statute that already deals with rental vehicles, so we weren't creating a new definition, but it did expand the scope of the original bill from only car rental leasing agencies to any business that provides a vehicle as part of their business, which would be car dealers, or in my case, people that repair vehicles that would provide a loaner if somebody were to get a parking ticket. One of our loaners, we would still have the ability to eliminate our liability as we provide the information on how they can go after the person that was actually parked in the vehicle. And we appreciate Mr. Elkins allowing us to hitchhike our amendment. We appreciate the committee's indulgence in giving us some time to get the amendments prepared.
Thank you. Any questions, these gentlemen? Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did have a question. It seems that the in Section 2, Subsection 2, right there at the end, lines 23, 24, it does seem that there's a distinction, an amendment there. Can you explain to me what the basis of that is? The individual in control as opposed to renter or licensee. Is that making sense?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a line 23.
Yeah, I don't either.
The amendment?
In the amendment.
You're looking at the hand engrossed amendment.
Yeah, I am.
Vice Chair Parker. Hold on one moment, let me get you the amendments.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barton, I'm sure it's a perfectly good question. We just don't understand it.
I understand. I get that a lot. Line 20.
Thank you.
Individual in control of the vehicle as opposed to renter or licensee. There's a change in language. I'm wondering if this is a meaningful or substantive one.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barton, I would suggest not, other than the fact that Legislative Council simply took the definition from a different part of statute.
Gotcha.
And just moved it over because it was an existing statute that everybody was comfortable with and that was working well.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, if you read it this way, it could be, for example, the owner of the vehicle might be using it and mispark it. So that, isn't that the way that would read? Whoever's driving it, they're not necessarily a renter always. could be an employee of the company. So, you know, if the company misparks it, they ought to pay the fine.
Further questions, Representative Barton? I'm interested in your opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that it's that important. There could be distinctions, for example, in individual and control. Let's pretend I rented a car, but then I let you borrow it.
Okay, and you let me borrow it.
And, you know, there could be some affirmative defenses we're creating if then they try to issue the ticket to me. I mean, it is possible that we are creating a minor complication for somebody who wanted to issue the citation. I'm not going to lose sleep over this amendment.
Good.
You should never have lent it to him in the first place.
Yeah.
That is the first mistake.
If I might, the way that the statute and the way that this amendment is crafted, you would have to be in the business of providing vehicles. It wouldn't be a personal loaner from a friend to a friend because you wouldn't be in the business of. And if it were the circumstance where the owner of the rental car company was using one of his own vehicles, the best he could do is eliminate the liability of the business and put the liability on himself personally, which a person owning a business may want to do. They may not want the company to pay for it. They may want to pay for it out of their own pocket. It would seem to me that they could just write the check out of their own pocket. It wouldn't make a difference. But the person in control of the vehicle ultimately would have to pay the fine.
Representative Kinnemer?
Ready to have a motion to move the dash
one? Make sure Representative Barton isn't going to lose any sleep.
He said he was losing no sleep.
Representative Kinnemer, I didn't entertain a motion.
I move the dash one amendments to House Bill.
Representative, would you please move the House Bill 2039 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation?
Mr. Chair, to adopt the amendment first.
Okay. Representative Kinnemer moves dash one amendments into House Bill 2039. Any discussion? Is there any opposition? So move. Representative Kinnemer.
Move House Bill 2039 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Kinnemer moves House Bill 2039 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any questions, any concerns, or any opposition? So moved. Would anyone like to volunteer to carry this bill on the floor? I feel it probably needs an explanation after this conversation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Barton.
Although Representative Matthews is not here.
No, I'm not going to do that to him. Representative Kinnemer, do you like to carry this?
I'd be fine with
that. Very good. Thank you very much for your willingness to work.
Thank you, Kinnemer. Parking meter and a car.
I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2039 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2495.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2495 establishes that records of the State Accident Insurance Fund Corporation, otherwise known as SAFE, are subject to the state's public records law. The measure clarifies that sensitive business records or sensitive business records of financial or commercial information not customarily provided to business competitors are conditionally exempt from disclosure. The measure outlines exemptions and creates definitions for injured worker, employer records that are not subject to disclosure. There is an emergency clause effective upon passage, and there is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact on the bill.
And I need to find out who's interested in this bill first. I think I can just call Ms. Brocklin and Mr. DiLorenzo. And Mr. Powell, would you like to join them? Okay. Ms. Brocklin, go ahead whenever you're ready, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. I'm Brenda Rockland, representing SAFE Corporation this morning. I'm going to just make a few brief comments about the substance of this bill, and then I'll turn it over to Mr. DiLorenzo and Mr. Powell. Section 1 of the bill, on page 1, is really the heart of this particular legislation. It amends 656702, which would provide that SAFE's records are open for public inspection under the Public Records Act, just like every other public agency in Oregon. And we've set forth in our written testimony some background on how we got to that today in terms of a Court of Appeals case from 2003 that said at that time that SAFE's records were subject to inspection both under the Public Records Act and under 656702. This provision of the bill would simply make it clear that all public records requests go through the Public Records Act like they do for other public agencies. Sections 2 and 3 of the bill are really the same thing. As I understand it, Legislative Council added that twice because there's a sunset provision related to OHSU in the bill, and that's why it has to be repeated twice, but it's the same thing in both Section 2 and Section 3. And that allows Safe Corporation to protect some sensitive business information unless the public interest requires disclosure. So there would be that balancing act. And sensitive business information is defined in this bill to include information that is not customarily provided to business competitors. And that would include such things as pricing information, marketing plans, and some financial and actuarial information. Sections 2 and 3, though, also make it clear that some of SAFE's records do not qualify as sensitive business records. And that would include dividend formulas, advertising or lobbying contracts we have with any of our group insurance partners, and documents that are subject to discovery and litigation. And finally, Section 4 of the bill, which is on page 15, more fully defines employer account records, and that would include employers who provide information to us in order to do business with Safe Corporation, employers who do business with us, and employers who have done business with us in the past, provide us with business information that they obviously want to retain as confidential business information for their businesses, and this would allow us to continue to protect that information in any form, which was a subject of litigation that we've had over the years with Oregonians for Sound Economic Policy, and this kind of takes care of that particular issue. And then finally, claimant files, which are really injured worker files, are obviously protected and have been since the beginning. Those files obviously contain confidential medical and personal information about injured workers, and this just retains the fact that those would be protected as well. Happy to answer any questions you may have. Certainly the definitions for employer account records and claimant files, I should tell you, have gone through the Oregon Department of Justice. They helped us write that particular language. And David Leith from the Attorney General's office is here this morning if the committee has any questions from the angle of the Department of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John DiLorenzo. I'm a partner at the law firm of Davis Wright Tremaine, and for the last 8 years, I have served as legal counsel to Oregonians for Sound Economic Policy. My purpose here is to give you a little bit of the context of this bill. The proposed legislation and the agreement by SAFE and my client and Liberty Northwest to support it is one of several components of a global settlement which we have reached to settle all of the controversies that have existed between these parties for the last 8 years. I'm here to touch on just some of the key components of that settlement for your information. In May of 2003, the Court of Appeals ruled in one of our cases that SAFE's records were open to inspection, notwithstanding many of the exemptions in the public records law. In June of 2004, my client filed a motion to hold Safe Corporation in contempt for having failed to comply with a Marion County Circuit Court order to conduct a fair and faithful review of its records and to identify documents that had been responsive to our records request since 2001. Following a three-day hearing, the court held Safe Corporation in contempt and imposed a fine of $2,200,006 and change. At the same time, Safe's then-president and CEO stepped down, and Ms. Rockland was thereupon appointed to head up Safe Corporation. Due in large part to her leadership and to the reforms that she instituted at SAFE, the court reduced the fine by two-thirds and awarded my client its attorney's fees. SAFE appealed the case to the Court of Appeals.
The fine was reduced even further to approximately $24,000. The attorney fee award was affirmed, and the order by Judge Lipscomb relating to classes of documents that were subject to disclosure and other classes that were not was also affirmed by the Court of Appeals. The purpose of the settlement was to resolve all of the claims among the parties that were or could have been asserted by OSEP, my client, Oregonians for Sound Economic Policy, against SAFE, and vice versa. So the components of the settlement were first mutual releases, and by the way, the agreement's available to you if you would like to look at it at any point. Mutual releases, payment by SAFE of an agreed amount of OSEP's attorney's fees, an agreement by SAFE not to further appeal, an agreement by SAFE not to seek or to support legislation during the 2009 session to sell workers' compensation insurance outside of Oregon, and agreement by all of the parties to support what you see here in House Bill 2495. That's basically the settlement. Although House Bill 2495 will provide SAFE with many protections that it does not currently enjoy under the rule in OSEP versus SAFE, we believe that the sensitive business records exception is appropriate. It is a conditional exception that can be overcome if there is a showing that the public interest justifies disclosure. And we feel it is a very satisfactory and fair compromise. The only other thing I'd like to say is I once again would like to thank Ms. Rockland, not only for her good faith participation in our negotiations, but also for the leadership that she has shown at SAFE Corporation. And we are very happy that this whole controversy has come to an end.
Mr. Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Powell, representing Liberty Mutual, the parent company of Liberty Northwest. And we wholeheartedly support this bill and realize that a company like SAFE cannot do business without some of the protections found in this bill for protecting not only some of their own business records, but definitely that of their potential clients.
Thank you. And it's kind of my legislative experience is kind of paralleled this whole painful experience, and I'm glad to see you all here smiling at us together today. Members, any questions of this, Representative Witt?
No questions, Mr. Chairman, but I honestly never thought that I would see this panel appearing before the legislature in harmony, so this is a very historic occasion.
Representative, it's just another example of how this committee brings people together. Thank you for setting that up for me.
Mr. Chairman, you may want to be careful what you ask
yeah,
for.
Amen to that, brother. Any further questions or comments of this good panel? All right, thank you very much, folks. Would anyone else like to testify on House Bill 2495 today? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2495 and open work session House Bill 2495. I will entertain a motion. Representative Escobar.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2495 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Escobar moves House Bill 2495 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Are there any questions? Representative Cameron?
Just a potential conflict. Talk about reconciliation. I have establishments in both of these fine insurance companies and do their food service for them.
Hmm. All right,
so I've been in the middle of this the whole way.
Lucky devil.
That explains.
Is there any further questions or comments on this bill? Any opposition to this bill? All right, seeing none, so I'll move. Representative Witt, you want to carry this bill on the floor?
That'd be fine, Mr. Chairman. I'd be so pleased to do that.
Thank you very much. With that, I'll close the work session. Did I already close it?
No, okay.
Close it. If I hadn't, I am now. And anything for the good? Oh, forgive me. We have a
Chair, we have committee bills. Yes.
Representative Barton, would you please make a motion to make these bills?
Absolutely.
Draft bills, please.
Oh, yeah, numbers are weaker. Hold on 1 moment.
Mr. Chair, I move that LCs 1628, 2012, 2209, 2210, 2214, 2353, and 2601 be introduced as committee bills.
Representative Barton moves that House, legislative concepts 1628, 2012,
2209, 2210, 2214, 2353, and 2601 be introduced as committee bills. Is there any discussion? And once again, members, just for the record, this does not commit you to support or opposition of any of these concepts or bills. All this is a procedural vote to make these concepts into bills. So you are not committed to anything by your vote here today. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Is there anything for the good of the order? Tracy, you have anything for us? Seeing nothing, we're adjourned. Have a good